All right. Well, good afternoon, everyone. This is Julie Fedorchak, Chairman of the North Dakota Public Service Commission. We are gathered on the 12th floor of the State Capitol. Today is Tuesday, September 6th, and we are gathered for a work session on, do we have a specific case number for this?
Yep.
All right. Case number GS-15-723. So I don't have any opening comments on this, but I'll kick it over to my colleagues. But first, I think, well, after we all introduce ourselves, then we'll go around the room and introduce everyone in the room, and then we can kick it off and get the conversation rolling. So first, we'll start with Randy.
I also don't have opening comments except to welcome you and look forward to the rest of the discussion.
I have a few comments, but it might take a bit, so if you want to go around the room, then I'll kick
okay.
it off.
Okay, so Commissioner Kalk is here. We all have to speak into the mics. They need to be green. Otherwise, nobody can hear you who might be listening on the phone. You just turn that on. There you go. All right, so we're all set. Okay, so start with Pat.
I'm Patrick Fawn with the Public Service Commission staff, and on this particular case, advisor to the commissioners.
Pete Kowalczyk, Subsite Technologies, here on behalf of the City of Granville, representing them on their OQ policies, procedures, and their propane plant.
How do you spell Kowalczyk?
K-O-W-A-L-C-Z-Y-K.
Oh, yeah, I almost got it. I thought it was going to be just like mine.
Yeah, no.
Fedorchak, Kowalczyk.
Yeah,
I was wrong. Yours is cooler. I don't have a Z in mine. All right.
I'm Anita Trana. I'm the Granville City Auditor.
All right. Thanks, Anita.
Corey Long, the Mayor of Granville.
Mayor, thank you.
Craig Riemann, Pipeline Safety Inspector.
Jack Hsu, I was appointed as advocacy staff in this case, and I was working along with Aaron Mormon as he was on the advocacy staff as well in this case.
Okay, great. All right, well, that summarizes it. Commissioner Kalk was the sort of the push behind having a formal discussion about this, and so I'm pleased that you did that, Brian, so we can talk through all these issues and know each other and have a better understanding of everyone's roles and all the shared goals that we have, which is safe service to your customers. So, Brian, have at it.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mayor and Anita and Pete for coming down here. The commissioners, we have the chair, and each of us is broken up into portfolios, and my portfolio is pipeline safety, gas safety, so that's why it kind of migrated over my way. And I've been working this issue with the City of Granville since I got here in 2009. And so that's why when it came time, when the consent order was put together by all of you and our staff, you know, we could just have voted on it, thumbs up or thumbs down, have this informal today, which is just an informal discussion, or do a full-blown hearing. And it just seemed to me, from my viewpoint, that it was good to have a discussion like this instead of a formal hearing, but I didn't just want to make a decision on the consent order without having, quite honestly, a face-to-face. And first off, I just want to thank all of you for coming down here today and for what you do for mayor. I'm sure you get paid millions of dollars to be the mayor in Granville, and it's a lot going on up there. And Anita, you guys have, you know, tough jobs. All three of us come from, I would say, different parts of the state, but more rural backgrounds than urban, a lot of it. And so understand what it is to keep I understand what it is to keep a small community going. And so the dialogue that I've had over the years with the City of Granville is just, you've got a tough situation up there where you're the only city in the state that has this scenario where you own the system that you have to maintain with all the criteria. Way back when, the City of Hettinger had the same scenario, but somehow MDU and then worked something out. So, you know, it's your choice how you run it, but you are unique in what you have, and you probably know that. But it puts us in an interesting situation when we go out and inspect the criteria that we have to under federal and state guidelines, and it appears from that oftentimes you don't have the resources to do what you have to do. And we have struggled with it on the commission, keeping qualified pipeline inspectors. And I'm speaking as if these folks aren't right here right now. But, you know, it's challenging for us to maintain these folks because once they get fully trained, they become highly valuable somewhere else, and they go off and get hired. I mean, quite honestly, we hired your guy Bob away from you in 2009. So pretty darn qualified. So we had him here for a year, then we lost him to the industry. So one of the things that we've done on the commission is we have now two of them. We've been able to increase their pay where we think it's competitive. But it's not just all of you that are having this challenge. But all that being said, there's requirements that you have to follow. And I don't remember how many years ago it was exactly, but had the same kind of discussion with different players in the city of Granville. And we hoped we found a path forward. And now we've kind of back here again. And looking through the consent order and some of the things that are laid out with this, I think you have a much better plan this time. So I don't particularly have any concerns about this. I will, when we're done here, maybe get advocacy staff to say their piece and you guys to say your piece. But I do think that there's an understanding here that, okay, we could fine you. Well, what good would that really do? Because it'd be city dollars that come to us to go to the general fund, and it still doesn't solve the problem. Okay, we could shut you down. Well, what good does that do to anyone? Because you shut you down in the middle of winter, that's not good either. So part of our things which normally would be in our toolkit, I don't know that I'd be willing to exercise those because this is such a unique situation. But I also feel sometimes that the city knows of that from previous discussions, so you kind of have us over a barrel too. So I guess that's where I give you my background, and I'm really glad that you took the time to come down here today. I would just offer up that if – I don't know who wants to go first, but maybe walk through of why you think this consent order is something that we should support, and then just see if the questions – where the questions go, if that sounds okay, Madam Chair and Randy.
Yeah, that's – so you want the staff to walk through the consent order first?
I think just the highlights because I'm sure we've all read it, but I think that there's things that in the past the city has said they've done that didn't happen. And so I think I've read of the answers, but I'd like Craig you and Jack to tell them why you think this is different than what we've tried before. And then the flip side of that one is the city's turn, how the city's commitment is different than perhaps it was before.
Just give a little bit of background. The actual auditor in this case was Aaron Mormon. He went there about, I think, September 9th through 11th. He did an audit of the city of Granville, and he found four different what he believed were violations. He filed a notice of probable violation. If anyone is curious what they were, you can see them right on the first page of the consent agreement they're laid out. And then afterwards, we waited for Granville's response. They did file a couple of responses, but most of those responses weren't really any sort of defense to it as much as an explanation of what has happened. And so after that, they didn't request a hearing, but we did go forward with negotiations and settlement about a settlement process because I believe, and I'm speaking for Aaron at this point, that what he wanted to create was just really get them in compliance and create some sort of deterrent effect in the future to prevent this from happening again and kind of really give them a cudgel to push them forward on that. And the settlement agreement did lay that out, and in part of the settlement agreement, there was corrective action that needed to be done. And this all had to be done by September 1st, and I believe the corrective action was pretty similar to the last violation that they had as well. I mean, not anything out of the ordinary or much different, except for on this one, due to the fact that they were in violation again this time, we believe, because they lost a person who could actually do the sort of inspections for them. We required them not only to have the inspector who could cover all the qualified tasks, but also ensure that they have redundant inspector either contracted or being trained in order to cover those tasks in case the person leaves in a lurch or say he's gone for a period of time or any sort of illness occurs. And they agreed to do that. And in addition to that, they also we laid out a fine of $30,000, and they agreed to that in the consent agreement. However, $27,000 of this was suspended until the completion of the actual covering all the task and all the corrective action by September 1st. And I'm going to turn this over to Mr. Riemann here. And they did actually file a whole lot of the information, I believe, and what the work they've done up to this point in order to cover all this corrective action. And I'll let him speak to that.
Sure. I went out there 2 weeks ago just to check on the status of the consent agreement to make sure they're on track on completing it prior to September 1st. They were in the process at that time of getting the OQ completed. Since then, they've submitted the documentation, says all that's been complete. I reviewed it. the stuff that's been docketed, and it does meet the standards of what we were asking for them to do. So,
Craig, what do you think is different about this than the last time we said, okay, yeah, we trust you to fix it all?
The consent agreement was put together in a way where it requires some redundancy on their staff.
Okay.
And in the past, we've required them to get their staff trained, but there was no
backup.
Exactly.
Right.
So this allows them, if they have a change in staff, to still have all the tasks covered.
Okay. And I read that, but I wanted to make sure we also are recording all this. But if you don't mind, I would just, you kind of jumped in. How are you able to pull that off, the backup? Because I think it's a great idea. But once again, just concerned how this might play out from the city's viewpoint. So you were the mayor, I guess, whoever.
I guess how it really plays. Okay. I guess really how it plays out is that if, let's say, for instance, plain and simple, if Paul quits tomorrow, we have sub-site contracting Pete's guys to come in and to cover up, not cover up, but basically cover the job.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, but to come in and cover the job, you know, to basically do the work that needs to be done on our propane tank, plain and simple. I mean, that's pretty much why we, you know, I do know that Anita has been, you know, working pretty hard to get everything in line for this. You know, there's not too much more I can add to it, really. It's pretty plain and simple.
And right, and I think the difference this time maybe is I've lived in Granville for 20 years. It's my home. I'm raising my child there. It's where my roots are. And I work for the community. And so what I gather at this point is that our community wants to sustain what's there. And I feel that I'm confident to execute the duties that need to be carried through by making sure that if our guy isn't doing it, somebody else is carrying through the tasks. And I really honestly think that that is the difference. Our board changes every 4 years, you know, on election. There's no real answer to why it took 6 years to figure out that we're still not meeting what right. needs to be met. And really, we want our community to be safe. We want to make sure that things are being done accurately. And Craig's been out, Aaron's been out. They've witnessed how passionate I am with the job.
Anita, can I ask a question about just, I'd like a better context on the city staffing. So who does the city currently employ, and how do they? I would assume it's not a real deep staff. There's probably just a handful of full-time city employees, right?
Right. It is myself, and
we actually only have one full-time employee, which is Paul, and Anita.
And Paul's title is what?
He moves the snow and he fixes the
pool. He's the operator. He's the public works.
Public works director.
He's the whole everything. I mean, he's
he does the hands-on, and I do the administration.
Okay. And so he's now trained to do this to the...
Yes, ma'am.
All of the pipeline safety criteria, standards. He's trained for that. And then he does all the other public works needs. What about garbage and... that sort of thing.
That's subcontract.
Paul does that too?
No.
I was going to say.
No, Circle Sanitation out of mine. It picks up our garbage.
Okay, so
you know, and with contracting with Subsite, I feel that if I call Pete and say, you know, Paul's just, he's being taken out on other tasks, can your guy come out? I know he's going to have him ready for us. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we can't... say get all the anodes changed for the cathodic protection, I'm guessing Pete's guy is going to be able to come out and execute, make sure we have that done.
Is this in his job description, this work in Paul's?
In Paul's, yes.
I just started in June, and it's something I actually want to work on, and what we've talked about with Paul is to understand exactly what his job layout is, because from my understanding, when he came in, he just pretty much came in, you're going to be doing the whole show, you know, and there was nothing truly ever laid out.
Primarily, it is propane. Yeah. Primarily was the job description related to having to be so many miles from the town in order to qualify for the job and to be qualified for the propane tasks. That is his primary operating duty. Whether the garbage on Main Street gets left because he's got to go out and do a propane task, that's his priority, is the propane tasks.
Okay, so and the reason why I asked that is Paul's not going to be there forever either. And you won't either, Anita.
I know.
And so, but the system is going to be maintained years and years. And so that's what seems to me I'm most concerned about, is that there's some process in place where this is central to a, you know, the city structure and identified as such and known that this is the main job, or else you should be passing this off to some other entity that can provide that kind of oversight. It's pretty technical work.
Right.
And and if you get it wrong, I mean, you might be able to slip by for years, but you could have a huge disaster on your hands.
Right.
And that's what I think we all want to try to avoid. So we have to have the right procedures in place and be assured that those exist and comforted that, you know, that there's not going to be anything that slips through the cracks with, you know, the changing of the guard that is just a natural part of government.
The long-term plan that Julie's talking about, I mean, the fact that you are unique, that's your choice, right? But have you quote-unquote shopped around to see if...
yes, for a short time, and I've asked questions about this, and for instance, I believe we looked into MDU before in the past, and somebody shot us a number, $10,000 a month just to maintain it. Well, we can't afford that.
Just the outcome would be unaffordable or undesirable.
You know, from my understanding, it's pretty much what we're left at is maybe looking at different options, maybe in the near future, you know, to...
Natural gas, we were quoted at a $3 million price.
To come in through the north side of Minot.
To come from Minot out.
Still have to have the safety people in place to monitor that, too. So
right.
No different, really, in terms...
So, I mean, and the other option we've been discussing is possibly administering a service charge, you know, each month to cover, say, another employee that definitely is needed on all levels, whether it's administration or getting out on the field or whatnot, but using those funds to cover delegation of another resource. Mm-hmm. Because, yes, we have limited resources. Yes, our money is limited. You know, I mean,
what's your population and how many customers do you have?
Customers?
123 on the system. 123 on the system.
Okay.
Well, I would just offer up, we got to get through this current situation here, but the discussion with MDU, we often find ourselves in the middle of discussions with developers and MDU and all that. So, I mean, because the last time we met, different mayor, different personalities, they just basically said, no, we don't want your help on this. That was my perception of it. So, but I think if there's a willingness to explore other options,
I'm willing. I'm more than willing to look.
I think that we can figure something out going forward, through this situation, because it just does seem that it's an untenable situation long term.
Yeah.
Given that I don't know if Granville is growing, but I know that I grew up in Botno, and we're not growing much there. The only growth we get in Botno is people that leave UPM and Cirrus and move to Botno because those towns are going the other way. But I don't really know that I have any more questions about this. It sounds like you've got your person there. If he can't do the jobs, you've got the subcontractor in place. And then the long-term training plan of turnover, I think, is what Julie was alluding to.
Right.
My question is next for Pete. I'm not familiar with Subsite Technologies, so if it's a national company, I don't need to know that. But around North Dakota, around that region, what do you do and what resources do you have that we know that when Paul's not available that you actually have somebody that can go to Granville and do this work?
My company started April 30th of 2014. I've been in construction since I got out of the military in 2002. I've worked construction in the state of North Dakota ever since. My background is underground, in civil and underground, to include my employees as well. One of our clients is Montana Dakota Utilities. We provide, we are a subcontractor of MDU. We provide installation and repair of their system. We provide those services to them. We are based out of Minot. We are DOTOQ'd to their standards.
DOTOQ. Wow. What's that stand for?
Which is, it's just the program that we have, the Department of Transportation Operator Qualification Program.
Okay. Oh, DOT.
Yeah, DOTOQ.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Got it.
Sorry.
Got it. Sorry. I thought it was a new acronym I had never heard about. Just pronounced.
I just put it all together.
So do you do the work like MDU has changed where inside the house structure where they've said to customers it's your responsibility to maintain that? Are you helping them out in that area, or where are you helping MDU out at?
Exterior. We don't do anything interior. Not anything in, along with MDU, to my understanding, I can't speak on their behalf, but I believe that they have closed off their services inside the home because of liability reasons. So my company, what we do, along with, I wanted to clarify, there is another subcontractor agreement with the City of Granville, and it is B&H.
Right.
And B&H also provides the same similar services that we do to MDU on their gas side. So we provide services outside the home. So typically along the lines of what the State Plumbing Board says, we come up to about 5 foot of the building, you know, on the water side. But on the gas side, we'll come up and do the meter sets. And then the rest of it, the plumbing coming through the wall and then going into the home is taken care of by the plumber themselves. We do the fusion, the laying of the new the polyfusion, whether it be butt fusion, electric fusion, sidewall fusion, by any means that it needs to be installed, and then also the repairs to the main or the services, the tracer wires, the cathodic protection support.
So, Craig, when you come out to do an inspection in date future and something doesn't look right and it's something that the subcontractor worked, how do we check that the subcontractor, if you will, is qualified, and how does all that, or doesn't it matter if it then that's still in the city's dime?
It's still on the city. They have to provide me records for any people working on their system.
So the auditing trail was one of our findings before, the paperwork challenges. So who's going to maintain all this paperwork then?
So far it's me.
Okay. Because that was one of our findings before. Was it a repeat this time? I can't remember.
There were some gaps there, but they've been identified, and she's been working through them.
Okay.
Anita has.
And I'm sorry, sir, did I answer your question?
Yes.
We are based out of just to the east of Minot, still a Minot address, but.
You don't have to give details, but the only other question I had, just kind of roughly some kind of a range, how many employees you have?
We are sitting at, I think, 9 or 10 employees right now. And then I am the evaluator for the company. The only thing sad about that is that I can't do the work now. Once I'm an evaluator, I need somebody else to evaluate me. So I evaluate my troops that go out to the field to do the services. I evaluate their processes, and I retain the information from my employees. And then we are subject to audit by our customer, MDU. We have to comply by the Department of Transportation Operator Qualification Regulations as well.
Okay.
DOTOQ.
Right.
DOTOQ.
Yes. Yes, ma'am.
No, he's been a valuable asset. Because he is, like you said, a qualifier. So in the sense, we would lose an employee that was qualified, we would potentially easily, for whatever EASY stands for, be able to qualify new purchase, as long as we have subsite on board.
Mm-hmm. So our folks will look at your old contract, and our folks will review who you've contracted with and their qualifications and make sure that they're up to snuff, and if they aren't, then it'll be the city that's kind of on the hook for that.
I'm sorry, Randy, I always cut people off. That's my shortcomings, one of my many shortcomings.
That's one.
Is there a value of this $3,000 fine anymore? I'm asking. It's on there. It's a consent order. You both agree. You agree. The city agrees to pay for it. We talk about everything. We may get to that, but that's a question. So what's the value of fining the city anymore? I know it's a big reduction. I get that. But what's the value?
The value would be to create a deterrent effect going forward in order to prevent this from occurring again.
Okay. Is $3,000 enough then?
That's up to the commission to decide.
Okay. But the consent, we can't modify consent orders. We accept or reject. And then if we reject it, then of course you guys might do something different to it. But I just wanted to ask that question. How about from the city's viewpoint? Do you feel that that's appropriate or it should be less or more? Or how, do you have a budget for that?
No, we don't have a budget for fines. I mean, we're on a shoestring budget. I mean, like, grab
that mic there, Mayor.
We're like any other small town across the state. We're on a shoestring budget, especially with the cutbacks that are coming down the line. And if I'm not mistaken, it's roughly how much do we get for taxes? It's for within
over,
the city.
We mail over a little over $13,000.
So
for property tax.
For property taxes that, you know,
so
are.
So $3,000 of that would be like 24%.
24% went to this fine. I mean,
now,
you know.
We do have a separate, you know, of course, propane fund.
Mm-hmm.
But we're taking, in the last 2 years with the investments we've made, we've taken about a $41,000 investment cut in a red line, you know, that we've stuck out for our system.
I'm not following. Maybe move that over. I need to say the investment piece again, please.
Well, we've in the last 2 years. To make your income over expenses,
right.
We're under by about $41,000. So we took a big investment gain/loss. Does that make sense?
How did you make that up?
I didn't. I have some numbers.
Oh, so you're under. You're not collecting enough to cover the cost of the system?
Right now, yes. we've the last investments that we've made to remedy the violations. Mm-hmm. You know, putting a bypass on, changing our relief device have cost us some money. Putting contracts in place.
Well, and those are issues that we really aren't, I mean, it's not
our job.
No, we
understand.
To
you guys asked the
out.
Question. We're just here to
yeah,
answer.
No. And I think that it's important for us to keep that in mind, that those are the issues that you'll have to have discussions
yep.
with your city folks with. Understanding that those are required to keep the system safe.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And so I guess I also empathize with the situation you're in. It's a shoestring budget. But I think it's important for us as regulators to use the tools we have to make sure that people are know how serious it is and are being compliant. And with no fine at all, I feel like we wouldn't be doing enough. I think we have to do something,
okay.
Especially if down the road, say, hopefully this doesn't happen, but if there was some sort of injury, then it's like, well, what did the PSC do? Oh, they just said it's okay. We know you're in a tough situation, but, you know, you don't have enough money, so they didn't fine you. That doesn't wash to somebody who lost a child in a propane, you know, explosion or something.
Trust
like
me,
that.
I'm the closest house to that propane tank, period.
Right.
So.
Right.
Yeah.
And even at that, I mean, the $30,000, just to kind of give you an idea, our propane fund alone is less than that fine, what we have.
Yeah.
On reserves. So $3,000 is definitely a lot less than $30,000.
Yes.
We would have to stick our neck outs to pay mm-hmm. $30,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Understood. Jack, you had something else to add?
If I may, I believe I'm not commission advisory staff on this, but I do believe that you do have the option to either accept, deny, or likely modify with at that point in time, the parties would be able to likely withdraw from that. So if the commission did choose one way or the other to change the penalty, they likely could do that. However, speaking again on behalf of Aaron and our conversations that we had, he did take a look at all the mitigation factors, and in addition to them, the size and the scope of their actual their facilities, they were one thing I will say definitely about Granville is they were very responsive, not only immediately to our notice of probable violation, but also when we were requesting things to be done all the way through this process, they were very quick to respond and actually take corrective action prior to when we would ask them to do so. So with that in mind, I believe that's a big reason why Aaron did choose to have some sort of mitigation in that regard as well.
The reducing of the fine.
Yes, Commissioner.
Okay.
The inspection protocol, Craig, do we go back out there more frequently now? I didn't see anything in there that said anything about more frequent inspections. I know we talked about a change in schedule, but I don't see anything in here on that.
Well, this is more for the city itself. On our end, we do have in place that we do go out there a little more often just to follow up. You know, I was out there a couple times this summer already just to check in, see how things are going, as well as back in April I was out there. So we will be out there a little more often going forward just to make sure that they're following through.
One other thought on the rates and the issue of making this, you know, financially feasible in Granville. I'm not sure who advises you or if we have any role on the rate side of things, but we do when other companies review rates and work with them and make sure that they have enough to cover their costs, right? So this is an issue related to safety, which is separate from that, but just from an advisory standpoint, we have experts in our office that might be able to provide some insight to you with some tools to help you develop a rate that might help you recover what you need to keep the system safe and viable long term. So again, it would just be kind of an advisory basis maybe, and maybe they could even direct you to somebody who could commission to hire even to help you with that longer term. Mike Diller would be perfect. So anyway, I think that's something that you should take advantage of and see if we can't give you some insights into how to structure a rate that would work long term. Randy?
I'm good.
Jack?
Nothing further.
Patrick? Do you guys have anything more?
No, I just know that this is serious, and it, you know, I completely understand, you know. I guess just to speak for Granville, it's just for myself. Like I said, I'm the closest place to that propane tank. Literally, it's like in my backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if I can say anything, you know, by all means, I like to keep an open book and be honest. And that's what, you know, I'm just here to say. You know, just that we're willing to do whatever we need to do in order to keep that propane tank going for now.
Yeah.
And if it's different options that we're looking for in the future, we are definitely going to look into that too, possibly. I mean,
how big is that tank?
30,000.
That's 26,000.
Yeah.
You know, and right now, I mean, where we're at too is our school supplies.
That's the
big
thing.
Supplied
is supplies
by propane.
The school. If that propane goes out, they get a cold shower.
It'd be nice for us to be prepared to work with the school, you know, on options rather than turning off their valve.
Okay.
You know, we'd put 150 kids out of school to be bused somewhere that maybe would have to sustain seating all of them. In my opinion, I would like to see the residents choose their options. You know, I mean, we'll do what it takes to sustain what's there, but if we need to up the charges and people need to decide, well, I can't afford that or I can't afford it, That's their choice then, or we need to, you know, work with the school and work with the businesses on options so that maybe we can gradually look at other resources.
Mm-hmm.
At the risk of putting myself in hot water, I'd be happy if you do a discussion on this to come up and represent, if it's okay with my colleagues, the commission's viewpoint in some of this, so it's not just you guys saying, listen, this is the world we go through. MDU has a fixed charge that covers their costs, and they have what they do for gas, and you know, you've got good people here that are trying to pay the bills, but this is the cost of doing business that perhaps it hasn't changed over time, so it's not just you delivering the message.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. We do that a lot.
Cause
I do.
Yeah.
We do, because we have
whenever
a public.
We talk about rate cases.
We go out into public hearings, and we have to explain to them what the company wants and then what our decision is. And one of our most controversial decisions. Now, a controversial decision has been when we went. Yeah, right.
How many of those?
Is when someone is their basic fixed charge goes from $4 a month to $18.60.
Right.
And people are just livid. Then you go, well, but wait a minute. This is a charge that it costs you to have it come into your house.
Right.
Now there's that's got to be fixed. And then once they walk it through, they have a choice. If they want to go to electricity or they want to go to something else.
Right, and then we put it in the hands of the public. Then the public can decide.
But there's a minimum you have to have to run that joint.
You bet.
We have to follow through.
Yeah, and if you have, 25% of those people go elsewhere, then the cost for the remaining 75% is going to be higher.
Right.
So it's, you're in a... It is quite a situation. Yep. But you need facts. You need that.
We are planning a public awareness emergency training open to the public, hopefully here in November. I don't know if that would be something.
That happens to be Election Day, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah.
That's deer hunting, too.
Right, I know, yeah.
So we got to talk this through.
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of times I hear from people, why is it so different now? Why is it so much harder to comply right now than it was 10 years ago? It'd be nice to have somebody else back us up and saying the regulations are getting harder, right? I mean,
it's that easy.
It is. It comes above you too. It's federal and then state. I mean, it's
But it's easier said. Yeah.
Right.
Accidents happening elsewhere, and all those things.
So, why could one person do it all 10 years ago or 15 years ago compared to now?
In reference to Bob.
Right. Yep. So what is the difference? Well, the administration, paperwork, surveys, tests. Mm-hmm.
There have been, there have been some catastrophic gas accidents around the country that changed the rules in the last 5-7 years where 36-inch gas lines blow up and then those rules get laid out and they get walked all the way down to a system like a city. And that's what the federal rules say, so that's what we follow through on.
Well, and Bob probably handled it fine and maybe always should have had backup, but just didn't because he wasn't going anywhere or whatever. But, it's just, again, experience. You should have backup, and that's what the rules require now. So, and systems need reinvestment and recharge. They get old. So 10 years ago, now you've got a system that's 10 years older. More breaks down, and it's not a static investment. It's something that's ongoing for folks, and
we know that. And really, I think we all know within the city that enhancements are going to be continuous.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to continuously work on paperwork plans, emergency plan updates, public awareness updates. We just did, our plant looks phenomenal right now. Tag out, mark outs, new valves, new relief device. We got a contract set up with Southern Cross to do the transmission line testing. I mean, really, it has come a long ways in 2 years.
Good. Well, it sounds like you guys have done some good work. We've got a good process in place. Mm-hmm. If there's any way we can help you on the rate side, just from an expertise standpoint and a resource, let us know. We're happy to offer those sorts of folks to you guys as well. And we've got our eyes and ears for us out there that'll keep in touch with you, and hopefully it'll be smooth sailing from here on out.
I hope so. We hope so.
I know there was a couple things we notated. But that was already passed when Craig and Aaron visited for 2015. There was a few things outstanding. We couldn't remedy them. And he said that he's communicated that a bit. But
just so you know, the way this would play out is this: we don't make any final decisions today. We'll have either a work session or we'll just put something on the agenda to vote for. So there will be media that will follow this, because we'll have to vote on this, and we'll either yes or no, or we'll split or somehow. So that's where we'll probably within the next 2 to 4 weeks, we'll have a final decision on this. So when it goes, it'll no doubt appear in the different papers. So it's so you can use it just to be an awareness that it's there'll be something that'll be coming on this.
All right.
Okay. So the option then would be to pay the penalty or turn off our valve?
Well, our option is going to be to accept or reject the consent order.
Okay.
And so I'm not speaking for my colleagues here, but I think you've answered our questions, so I think we'll probably be able to figure out a path forward. But if we reject the consent order, then there'll be something we would offer in lieu of it. If we accept it, then you pay the fine and move on.
You've already consented to paying the fine by signing this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just concerned about turning our valve off in October.
This consent order agreement was designed to avoid that. If we go along with that, then you guys pay the fine and you're good to go.
Okay.
Right.
All right. Yeah, we're not interested in school children without heat.
Right.
150 of them. No. I think that we'll stay in close touch and hopefully things will go smoothly. And if we can help connect you to resources that might help pave the way outside of this or to wean yourself off of this too, just let us know how we can help support you.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Any other comments?
No, but thanks for coming. It makes it a lot easier to feel comfortable with the long-term resolution, having met everybody and understand.
Thank you for having us.
Build up to this.
Okay, that concludes the work session on case number GS15-723.